May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
At this point, I'd like to call our next witness, Shane Doyle, on behalf of plaintiffs Ruby and Lillian. During Shane Doyle's testimony, I'm going to be referring to plaintiffs' exhibit P15 and P100. Can you please state your name for the record?
Shane Doyle.
Can you please spell that for the record?
S-H-A-N-E-D-O-Y-L-E.
Mr. Doyle, what's your relationship to plaintiffs Ruby and Lillian?
I'm their dad.
And are you their legal guardian in this case?
Yes.
Are Ruby and Lillian here today?
Yes, they are.
Do Ruby and Lillian have siblings?
Yes, they have an older sister, Florence, and then they have younger twin brothers, Blake and Quana.
Can you please describe who we're seeing in this picture here?
So this is Ruby and Lily holding a family friend, a baby. Ruby has the green teal shirt, and Lily is dressed in an elk tooth dress.
And you mentioned they have siblings. Can you please identify the people in this picture, please?
Yeah, going from right to left, that's Ruby standing there with the eagle feather or the hawk feather fan. And then Lillian standing with the fancy shawl on the rock. Right next to them is my daughter Florence standing at the back. That's Quana standing in front of her, my wife Megan, Blake in front of her, and then I'm on the end there.
And are you here today to testify on behalf of Ruby and Lillian?
Yes.
How old are Ruby and Lillian?
Ruby is, gosh. I can't believe that. Let's see, 2008, 15, and Lily is 12.
Do you recall how old Ruby and Lillian were when this case was filed in March 2020?
Yeah, Ruby was 12 and Lillian was 9.
Do Ruby and Lillian live with you?
Yes, they do.
And where do you live?
In Bozeman, Montana.
Are Ruby and Lillian from Bozeman?
Yes, they're both born there.
Do Ruby and Lillian have other family in Montana?
Yes, they do have a large extended family, most in eastern Montana and Crow Reservation, and then also my wife has family in northwestern Montana.
Mr. Doyle, can you please describe what we're seeing on the screen here?
So that's a map of Montana, and outlined there is the Crow Indian Reservation.
Are Ruby and Lillian tribal members of the Crow Nation?
Yes, they are both enrolled tribal members.
Do Ruby and Lillian have other family members that are part of the Crow Nation?
Yes, they do have hundreds of extended family members who are enrolled in the tribe.
Do Ruby and Lillian visit their family on the Crow Reservation?
Yes, we do, several times a year.
Do Ruby and Lillian have Crow names?
Yes, they have Crow names. Ruby's name is Beachgada and means pretty woman. And Lillian's name is Malashtif, means loved by many.
How did they get their Crow names?
They had their names given to them by their grandmother, Narina May Waxobrise.
Can you please describe what the Crow Fair is?
Yes, the Crow Fair is an annual gathering of the tribe. It happens every year in the third week of August. And it's over 100 years old. It was first started around the turn of the 20th century as an agricultural fair, but quickly changed to more of a traditional cultural celebration. And so it's kind of a large family reunion for most extended families. And there's opportunities to engage and participate in cultural events throughout the week. And most people stay in teepees during that time.
Does your family stay in teepees?
Yes, we do.
Where does the Crow Fair take place?
It takes place in Crow Agency, along the banks of Little Bighorn River.
Can you please describe what we're seeing on the screen now, Mr. Doyle?
Okay, this is a picture of Ruby and Lily on both ends. Again, Ruby has the pink shirt, tank top, and Ruby is holding my nephew on the other side. And then my niece, Madison, wearing a red shirt, and my sister wearing the salmon-colored shirt with Montana on it, and then my wife next to her with the teal shirt and a necklace. And they were getting ready to participate in a dance to honor missing and murdered Indigenous women. So that's why they had these red skirts on and shirts.
Do Ruby and Lillian attend the Crow Fair?
Yes, we attend Crow Fair every year.
Have they been going their whole life?
Yes, they have.
Is attending Crow Fair an important activity for Ruby and Lillian?
Yes, I think it's one of the most important events of their year, something that they look forward to and talk about all year.
What are some of the things that they enjoy doing at the Crow Fair?
Well, it's a great time to typically be outside. You know, they like to parade. There's parades every morning, go through the entire encampment, and so that takes about 45 minutes to an hour. You know, they like to dance. They're both dancers. they do fancy shawl and jingle dress, and also traditional. We like to go to the rodeo. Enjoy hanging out in camp with family. You know, there are anniversaries and namings and just a whole bunch of different other kind of events that are happening during Crow Fair that we like to be taken in and being involved with.
You mentioned some of the dances they do. Can you describe those dances in a little bit more detail, please?
Yeah, they both really, I think, enjoy jingle dress and fancy shawl most. And those are dances that kind of started in the 20th century when powwows kind of started, you know, when the reservation era began. And those dances require a great deal of athleticism. You know, they keep in time with the drum beat. Drum beat is usually pretty fast. They're spinning and dancing at a pretty fast rate, especially with the fancy dance. But even with the jingle dress, there's a lot of movement in the calves, a lot of focus on the lower leg. And so pretty strenuous exercise.
You mentioned the Crow Fair takes place the third week in August. Is that right?
Yes.
What's the weather usually like that time of year and at that location?
Yep, growing up in Crow Agency, it was always hot. It's always been hot there. I think 90 degrees is pretty typical during that time of the year.
Has it been hotter in recent years?
Yes, it has been hotter. And it's been, we've seen dramatic extremes. You know, we've seen extreme heat over 100 degrees, and then we've also seen torrential downpours, rain so hard that the entire camp would be muddy, a mud hole. The parade would have to be canceled, the rodeo postponed. And so, yeah, I think extreme weather events are a highlight of the Crow Fair now.
Does the extreme heat and the extreme weather events disrupt the activities at Crow Fair?
Absolutely. You know, most of the events at Crow Fair are outdoors. So when it's way too hot, when it's up over 100 degrees, you know, we have a Teepee Creeper run on Saturday morning of the Crow Fair. And, you know, that's a pretty strenuous exercise. You're out there. We attempted to add a half marathon to that many years ago, but decided that it was kind of pushing it in the heat. But yeah, just about everything we do is, there's really nothing that's indoors at Crow Fair.
Can you explain a little bit about, specific to Ruby and Lillian, how they are impacted by the heat and extreme weather?
Yeah, all of the activities that they enjoy doing are threatened by extreme temperatures. You know, dancing, we have the powwow that starts in the afternoon, Saturday and Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. And, you know, the sun is pretty high in the sky and there's a grand entry at that time. And so there's hundreds of dancers. You know, they're dressed in usually pretty heavy attire. You know, they have sewn, embroidered dresses, sometimes buckskin, but most typically covered with cloth. And so, you know, there have been times where we've decided that they shouldn't dance because it was too hot and too smoky. So, yeah, I think that they're definitely impacted by that.
How do Ruby and Lillian feel when they aren't able to dance because of the heat or smoke, for example?
Well, it's a huge disappointment. It's something we look forward to every year. And, you know, I don't think there's anything honestly comparable in American society to what Crow kids experience at the Crow Fair. You know, there is really nothing. Yeah, I mean, you're there with your community, your extended family, you're staying in teepees, you're running around in the campground, you can participate in these great events. And, you know, it's something that is just so unforgettable and such an important part of your identity. If you miss out on that, that's, I think, a traumatic loss.
Are Ruby and Lily feeling that loss, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely feel that when, you know, when Crow Fair is washed out, it's been washed out now at least two times in the past decade where we have rains come in and everything just pretty much gets canceled. And then also the heat. So just never really knowing, and always being kind of worried about, you know, hopefully things will work out this year.
You mentioned smoke sometimes. Is it smoky at Crow Fair sometimes, some years?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we've had some really bad years for smoke and ash. And it's just not the kind of weather that you really want to be doing anything outside. And even in the parade, which most people in the parade are either on horseback or on a float, but even just being in the parade for an hour and sitting up there in the sun for, you know, another half hour while they're getting things ready and then breaking things down, it's a lot of time to be exposed in any kind of extreme weather.
Are there any traditional foods that are an important part of Crow Fair?
Yes, there are many traditional foods that are important to Crow Fair. Chokecherries is always a highlight. The chokecherry harvest is associated with the Crow Fair. In Crow, they say when the chokecherries are ripe, that's when the Crow Fair is happening. And so pretty much most meals at camp, there's berry soup involved, and that includes berries that were harvested throughout the summer, including chokecherries.
Have you noticed any changes recently to the availability or the timing of the ripening of chokecherries?
Yes, yeah. The chokecherries are much harder to predict. You know, a few years ago, the drought was so extreme that they didn't come ripe until way later. There was a lot fewer of them. And they were not ripe at Crow Fair. And so that was something that did not match with the oral tradition history, I guess, of that event.
Is that unusual?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's something that people have so closely associated those two things for so long, well, over 100 years. And now we're starting to see a shift in that.
Do Ruby and Lillian like to pick choke cherries?
Yeah, that's a favorite activity that we like to do every year. Usually, you know, just before school starts, you know, the last little kind of opportunity to have some relaxed family time. And then, you know, we process them and turn them into syrup.
You mentioned family time. Is picking choke cherries something you all do together as a family?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that is really a strong part of the Crow tradition, is going out as a family and harvesting, you know, these berries. It's also a time, you know, the bears are out, and so they want to eat these berries, and so you want to go as a group because there's safety in numbers.
What do you do with the choke cherries that your family picks?
Well, we process them always into syrup. We crush them and strain the juice out, and then add some sweetener and boil it up, and then put them into fruit or jars and preserve them for the year. And we eat them throughout the year on everything: pancakes, ice cream, just anything.
Mr. Joe, can you please describe what we're seeing on the screen now?
Yep. So this is Ruby and Lily getting some choke cherries and, eating a few. They're pretty tart. So, it's not like huckleberries where you eat half and then, pocket the other half. This one here, you 99%, I think you put in a bag. But, it's just a great time to laugh and have fun and just, celebrate the bounty that, the wild bounty that Montana provides.
And what about on the screen now? What are we seeing here?
Yep, that's again, another season of us harvesting. We had a Korean exchange student staying with us at the time, and she's there in the blue sweater. And we wanted to take her out because she had never seen this, or, she'd never tasted a choke cherry. And so it was pretty exotic for her. And it was a lot of fun just to go through the whole process with her and, share one of our traditions here with someone from overseas.
And are those the choke cherries kind of on the right screen, the dark berries?
Yeah. Yep. And we just, again, have a little basket that we put them in and, collect them. We usually spend, a couple hours just gradually just, relaxingly picking them.
Do Ruby and Lillian help with the processing of the choke cherries?
Yeah, they do most of it, actually. They really like it. I think they really enjoy, just the whole process. And it's fun to be able to do everything from start to finish, pick them, process them, and then eat them.
Where are some of the places that they like to go choke cherry picking?
We live in Bozeman, and so, and we've been there for a long time. And so we know where all the places are. There's a place off of, Keggy, off of this trail that, is pretty popular. And there's quite a few berry trees there. We like to go pick them. People walk past us and ask us sometimes, "What are you guys doing?" And not very many people know about them. I've never seen anyone else harvest them. And a lot of the trees that we go to are just right along the city sidewalks.
You mentioned earlier that with the drought and the heat, they're ripening later and there are fewer berries. How does that affect your family's ability to harvest and preserve choke cherries?
Yeah, it really inhibits our ability to do that. It's been a few years now, but there was a season where we really didn't get any. They weren't ripe in time. You know, when school starts, everyone gets really busy. It's hard to find the time. That same year, I was asked by the kids' school, to come and help with the local elementary, some local elementary students in their art class go pick some choke cherries. And, I took the kids out and, to the trees that are close by to the school where we could walk, and there was none on them. And we walked to at least 5 different stands where there was usually, you know, a whole bunch, and there was none on them. And I think combination of factors, there's not as many berries, they're coming out later. You know, the drought has affected them. And then when the birds start migrating south again, if there's any berries on those trees, they'll get all of them.
Have wildfires in any way affected your family's ability to pick choke cherries?
Yes, wildfires have impacted everything we do. Getting choke cherries is another example. You know, we don't go out when it gets hot and smoky.
In your experience, are the wildfires worse than you remember them being?
Yeah, I don't remember wildfires as a kid. You know, not being able to see the sky, see the mountains. That was not part of my childhood experience, but now it's pretty much a pillar of our summer experience.
How do the wildfires impact Ruby and Lillian?
Well, you know, they both like to get outside and do things. And, you know, when it's smoky, we really just encourage them to try and stay inside. And, you know, Ruby was diagnosed with asthma when she was 8 years old. She had an acute form of pneumonia. And so ever since that diagnosis, we've always been real thoughtful, careful about what kind of activities that she's involved with.
Does the smoke inhibit Ruby or Lillian's ability to participate in sports or other outdoor activities?
Yes, it does. You know, like I said, when Ruby was given an inhaler and diagnosed with asthma, you know, we've just always thought that it's in everyone's best interest that she's not running around when it's smoky. And, you know, as her sister, they do a lot of things together, so Lillian tends to stay inside too.
How do Ruby and Lillian feel about not being able to go outside as much when it's smoky?
Well, I think it's a bummer. It's just, you know, you only get 3 months of summer. Here in Montana, it's usually cold most of the year. So you finally get this chance to really go outside, you know, and not have to go to school and not have to put on a heavy coat, but now you're stuck inside. I mean, it's a disappointment.
Have there been any fires near where you live in Bozeman?
Yes, there have been some fires, lots of fires. We're up, it's the prime area for smoke. You know, and the big one that we had was a Bridger fire about 3 years ago.
Can you please describe what we're seeing on the slide, Mr. Doyle?
That's the evening of the Bridger fire, and that's my wife and my twin boys. And we were just driving around town that night. We wanted to go out and look, see, you know, what was happening around town. I think to get a better look at the fire, we drove up on the Pete's Hill there, and there was a fellow out there with a tripod taking photographs of the fire, and he offered to take our picture. And so my wife got out there with my boys, but my daughters didn't want to be in the picture, so they weren't in it, but they were there that night.
What was it like seeing this flames and fire so close to where you live?
It was surreal. Never seen anything like it. It's just kind of shocking, shock and awe. But at the same time, you're not surprised because it's been so hot all summer and it's so dry. When we were standing there looking at that fire that night, it was probably an 80 degree wind that was blowing on us. And, it just makes sense that you're going to see these kinds of events.
You said Ruby and Lillian were there when this picture was taken?
Yes, they were there. Yep.
What was it like for them seeing the flames and the fire close to where you live, where they live?
Well, I think it worried them. You know, the conversation came up, are we safe here? You know, will the fire come into town? What if the fire came into town? And, those questions have to enter your mind when you're looking at something like that.
Can you please describe what's displayed on the screen now, Mr. Doyle?
That's the cloud that was coming up from the Bridger fire that day. We drove into campus, and I took a photograph from the parking lot there by one of the dorms. And honestly, that photo does not do it justice. I mean, if you were standing there and you saw that cloud was like four times the size of the Bridger Mountains. It was like a nuclear bomb had gone off. The wind was blowing probably 25, 30 miles an hour. I mean, it was, I can still get a chill thinking about how it felt that day looking at that.
And just for the record, this picture has been marked as Plaintiff's Exhibit P15. And this has been marked as Plaintiff's Exhibit P100. Mr. Doyle, shifting gears a little bit, what types of outdoor recreational activities do Ruby and Lillian enjoy in the summer, say?
Yeah, we have a lot of activities that we enjoy. They enjoy swimming. Bozeman's one of the few towns in Montana we don't really have a swim center. And then where our house is at, it's pretty close to the Gallatin River. So they love to go to the Gallatin River. Also the Madison, it's a short drive from our house to take a float on the Madison. We do that several times every summer. But I think really just getting outside and enjoying Montana rivers is probably for one thing. We also love to hike. We have a lot of trails around Bozeman. You know, there's a Kirkhill, there's Cottonwood Creek. We go out, towards the Tobacco Roots. So yeah, we make the use of our outdoor opportunities.
Do you and Ruby and Lillian go floating or rafting down the rivers as well?
Yep. Floating, rafting, that's one of our favorite activities.
How often would you say you go floating or rafting or swimming on the rivers in the summer?
I would say at least a couple times a month.
And that's with Ruby and Lillian?
Yeah, that's all of us. You know, we usually do things as a family. And, you know, like I said, we have 5 kids, my wife and I. And so, we have a pretty good group.
Does the smoke ever make it difficult to go recreating on the rivers?
Yeah, I think the smoke is just, I think it's a depressing, I don't know if everyone feels that way, but I think our family, this is kind of a doldrum, something about it. I mean, I love a rainy day, but not a smoky day.
Are there times when it's sometimes too smoky to go outside because of your worry for Ruby and Lillian?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I so many memories of looking at the air quality index and telling them, we're going to have to stay inside today. But really the biggest air quality index we have is when we look out to the east, can we see the Bridger Mountains or not? And there have been weeks at a time where we can barely see a silhouette. So I know It's not healthy to have kids out when it's that bad.
Can you please describe what is displayed on the screen now, Mr. Doyle?
Yeah, here's a picture of Ruby and Lily, my wife, my boys, and their friend Leah. And we had gone down to the Gallatin River to just enjoy the day and float and swim. And you can see there where we're sitting, that's where the river typically goes. Right now, if we were there, that river is probably getting close to the bottom of that bridge because it's at the high water mark. But in August, now with the drought, it's so low that you can see it's barely going down. It might be going, maybe 5 miles per hour. Not a lot of water in that river.
Have the drought conditions led to lower flows in the rivers in your experience?
Absolutely, especially the Gallatin. We watch that river because there's no dam on it. So it goes with the climate, The Madison's a different story because of the dam there up at Innisfil. This one here, when you go look at it in August when it's barely trickling, it's worrisome. All the fishing restrictions come on way earlier. They come on, 6 weeks before it gets this low usually, but it's getting worse every year.
Does the drought and the low river conditions impact your ability and Ruby and Lillian's ability to enjoy recreating on the river?
Yes, you can see here, on one hand, it's kind of convenient to be able to sit right next to the water and have a sandwich and picnic. But on the other hand, it's kind of sad to know that, your river is more like a little creek.
Mr. Doyle, why do you think Ruby and Lillian wanted to join this lawsuit as plaintiffs?
Well, when they were approached, they really didn't hesitate. They thought it was something that they thought made sense, and it just was a natural thing for them to do.
What made sense to them about joining this lawsuit?
Well, they believe strongly, I think, in having a happy, healthy life. I think happy and healthy are intertwined. And so, they have been happy and healthy kids, and they want to make sure that other people have that opportunity.
Are Ruby and Lillian interested in protecting Montana's environment and natural resources as being plaintiffs in this case?
Yes, they are. As part of the Crow tribe, they're taught, we're taught, one of our sayings is, we have three mothers, and your natural mother, and you have your home and the earth. And, taking care of those three things is your responsibility. And so I think that, this was a natural part of that for them from their cultural perspective.
How do you think Ruby and Lillian would feel if they were successful in this lawsuit?
They'd be very happy, and they would feel like, they've done their part on this one front to make a difference.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle. I have no further questions. And at this time, I'd like to move into evidence, plaintiff's exhibit P15 and P100.
No objection, no questions.
All right, P15 and P100 are admitted. Thank you, Mr. Jordan. We will take our morning recess now. We'll be in recess for about 15 minutes. All right.